What is up, wrestling fans? Welcome to episode number 642 of the SmackDown Moment Smack Talk Podcast, Hot Tags of the Week. We're going to be breaking down everything that happened in the world of pro wrestling and sports entertainment over the past few days we feel like talking about for this edition. I'm your host, as always, Tony Mango, joined as always by Callum Wiggins.
Yes, just me.
Just Callum today. Rob is busy doing, I don't know, whatever the hell Rob's doing. We didn't want to wait for him. We have some time schedule stuff to go in there, but Rob sends his regards, I'm sure. And we want to know what you have to say for this episode, too, so drop your thoughts in the comment section below. If you are on YouTube, of course, then also click on all those different positive buttons you can see on there, like the like button, double check that you are subscribed to the channel, ring that notification bell for those email alerts. Click on that join button to get access to the same stuff as the Patreon. If you go to patreon.com/smarkoutmoment, you will see the Darkcast tier, the Pick Your Poison tier, dollar month tier, all that stuff is exactly the same as it is over on the YouTube channel membership. And it's all greatly, greatly appreciated, as are any of the other ways you can help us on the monetary side of things, like the thanks button, the Redbubble and Tee Public shops. You know, anything along those lines. But also keep in mind that if you do pick up something on those merchandise shops for either SmartCow Moment or A Mango Tees or Fanboys Anonymous, which if you don't know what Fanboys Anonymous is, of course, go to fanboysanonymous.com. But if you do pick up anything like that, then that can give you access to contest points for the current Funko Pop contest we have going on right now, the annual Road to WrestleMania giveaway that I do, sponsored by fun.com. is going to be for three Rocky Maivia pop figures, the Funko Pops that everybody loves. And, you know, Rocky Maivia, of course, is an old school classic. So The Rock being a big part of WrestleMania this year, I figured that that'd be a fun little one to put out there. And you can have all sorts of different ways that you can enter that contest. Most of them are basically just sharing something on social media, you know, retweeting something or going to, you know, double check that you are subscribed to the YouTube channels and stuff like that. But you also get a lot of points anytime that you pick up any kind of merchandise. And that includes even just stickers, just saying. Doesn't have to be, you know, the most expensive options that are out there. But I do try to give some extra points for the people that would pick up something like a hoodie rather than a sticker or something. So the amount of points that you can get into the contest and all those entries are entirely determined upon how much you want to do. You can do daily entries. You can share things over and over and over again. You can post things all over the place and stuff. So if you want to win those Funko Pops, then go ahead and join the contest in any way that you can. Also, keep in mind, we have the Smark Madness tournament going on right now, where you can vote on that for, you know, the next couple weeks up until the finals during WrestleMania week, where we are determining who is, out of all the people that have had the most WrestleMania main events, who is the one that you kind of consider the WrestleMania main eventer, the true main event superstar of WrestleMania? Not necessarily Mr. WrestleMania when it comes to the best matches or, you know, the best win-loss record, but just who you think WrestleMania main event, who do you think of? Hulk Hogan, Stone Cold, John Cena, Roman Reigns, you know, all those kind of names that are out there. So vote on that while you can, too. Go back and check out that Hall of Lame podcast that we did for the Darkcast, most recent episode that we had recorded before. Also keep in mind the Discord server. All these things are lots to keep in mind, but at the same time, yeah, it's a lot of them are the same things that they are every single week, so you should know them by now. But anyway, that is our plug section of this podcast, everybody's favorite part. Let's start getting into some of the actual hot tags here. A couple little small package quick highlights to mention, one of them being Maryse is tumor free. It's very good news. It's good to report on things like that. And you know, hopefully she is going to be much better in all sorts of different ways when it comes to her health going forward. Not much to really like talk about on there. It's just like, that's good news. Alicia Fox is returning to the ring for the first time in, I don't know how many years it's been since we've seen Alicia Fox. Do you remember offhand? I know Alicia Fox isn't one of your favorites of all time or anything, but it's been, I would assume, about 8 years or something, right?
I don't know. It was like, the last thing I remember her doing was stuff involving like Cedric Alexander and Noam Dar. So that was just after the Cruiserweight Classic, and that was, what, 2016? So probably about six, seven, 8 years, something like that.
Apparently she was in both the 2022 and 2021 Royal Rumbles, but those don't really, really count. And she had lost a tag match alongside Tamina to the Iconics in April 29th, 2019. Really? It's only been that long. Okay. I thought it was longer than that. But she is going to be facing Mickie James in Australia on the StarCast Her show Friday, April 12th. And she's going by the name Vix Crow. Now it's kind of a mix around of her name Victoria Crawford. So anybody's in the Ballarat, Victoria, Australia, and you want to check that out, go ahead. Let's see, what else can we toss out that are the quick things? I don't think there's anything else I can think of off the top of my head. So let's just start getting into some of the other hot tags here. New Japan Cup was the thing that happened that I am totally unfamiliar with, but I know that you are, and the winner is Yota Tsuji.
Yeah, so finally they've given one of the young up-and-coming Reiwa Musketeers something to actually do and win and be excited about. So Yota Tsuji is one of the kind of more newcomers, more fresher faces, but the one they kind of have pushed fairly hard since, out of all the other ones, the one that's been probably most consistently well-booked since returning from excursion. So he was one that was thrusted straight into a title match with Sanada in his first match, singles match back in New Japan after excursion. And now he's after a middling performance in the G1 and not get a great result at Wrestle Kingdom. Now he's won the New Japan Cup, and that means he'll get the next opportunity at Tetsuya Naito's World Championship. So yeah, this is exciting times, especially considering how much New Japan has felt so flat recently, to see like a young guy with plenty of potential, and like he's a very exciting, and he has like shades of strong style stuff that you would see from someone like an Ishii, but as the flair of someone like a Nakamura. So I'm excited to see him go against Naito. I don't know whether he's gonna win the title, because Naito is still a very big deal and one of the top stars in the company, and so it would be a big statement for Tsuji to win, but I would be excited for it to happen. It would show a real statement of intent that they're getting behind this guy in particular. But that's kind of the news that he beat Hiroki Goto. Hiroki Goto was going for his fourth New Japan Cup win in that match, but fell short in that one.
Do you think that there's much of a chance that Tsuji actually wins that championship, though? Like, you said that you don't know if they were really going to switch it over to Naito, but stranger things have happened in recent years for New Japan. Do you think that there's kind of like, is it like a 50-50, or is it more like a 10% chance?
It's hard to tell, really, because I do firmly believe that Naito isn't a long-term champion, and I think that he won't have the championship by the time the G1 climax comes around, but there's still plenty of shows in between that happening, because that doesn't kick off until about July or August. So there's plenty of opportunity for Naito to drop the belt in that time. There's like Forbidden Door to think about, and Naito is a more marquee name than Yota Tsuji is. Same with like the Big Dominion show that will come up in June as well. So it's whether they want to stick with the kind of star of now that is Naito, and the star of the last like X number of years, like probably 7-8 years, or they want to launch a top star, or a new person they think that can be a top star, to the stratosphere and make him world champion now, quite early in his time in New Japan. So I'd probably lean towards Naito winning, probably in a like 70%, 30% thing. That'd be where I'd kind of stand at the moment, especially because Tsuji's cup promo saying that if he was to win the match, he wants to bring back the old world championship design.
Well, I mean, I like that older design much better, so maybe there's like somebody that kind of is thinking. It's weird to me that it's even a different lineage too, like, you know how I am when it comes to the WWE Universal Championship and all that stuff, where I'm like, no, keep the WWE title. And
he says he wants to bring back the old title, restore the old lineage of it, and then to officially retire the Intercontinental Championship as part of the kind of unified belt that they have now. So So yeah, that's what he's planning on doing, which does make me feel like, oh yeah, he's not winning the title, but we'll see. Maybe that is their plan, and he's the guy that's going to be the one that does it. It also is interesting that this match is happening because they're both in the same faction. They're both part of Los Ingobernables de Japón. So it's like faction versus faction warfare. So that'll be interesting how that dynamic plays into it as well.
I mean, it could be even the reason why they're doing it. Could be like maybe he being Tsuji, is like going to be the new quote unquote leader of that, while Naito like steps aside as like the, you know, Flair in Evolution could have been the leader, but it was Triple H, that kind of thing. Maybe they plan on doing something like that. I don't know.
Potentially. I mean, I think that they'd be kind of, especially in the, in a post Okada world, I think they would be potentially taking a massive risk of, like, I guess,
sidelining Naito.
Sidelining Naito and turning him into kind of a subservient in a faction instead of the leader of a faction. And I definitely hope they're not turning Tsuji heel, and certainly hope that he's not going to join House of Torture or something, because we've seen enough guys join House of Torture. And we need that faction to... Well, I want that faction to go away. It's probably not going to for a very long time. But it's nice to see that match being the main event of the upcoming Sakura Genesis show.
When is that?
So that's happening on the 6th of April.
Well, we'll be talking about that in some fashion around then. We obviously are going to have a lot going on that week. So, we'll lump that in with like predictions and stuff. We're like Supercard and stuff too.
I've got a full card announced for it. I won't go through every single match because obviously the earlier matches, like in any New Japan show, are just a bunch of like 6-man or 8-man tags. But the interesting ones are obviously Naito vs. Tsuji for the World Championship. Then there's the Never Open Weight Championship, Evil versus Shingo Takagi. Then we're getting a John Moxley match. It's going to be Shota Umino and John Moxley versus Ren Narita and Jack Perry. So we're getting New Japan and AEW versus New Japan and AEW in a way, really. Even though Jack Perry is, I guess at the moment, at least officially part of New Japan Pro Wrestling. Getting Sho versus Yo, the former Roppongi 3K tag team fighting for the Junior Heavyweight Championship. Got the tag championships, Bullet Clubs, Chase Owens and Kenta are facing Hiroki Goto and Yoshihashi. So hopefully they'll lose the title, because I don't know why they have it in the first place. And then the IWGP tag titles have been defended in a triple threat tag team match. Bullet Club War Dogs, the current champions, Clark Connors and Driller Maloney, versus Catch 2-2, Francesco Akira and TJP, versus Intergalactic Jet Setters, which is Kevin Knight and Kushida.
That's a name.
that's a Kevin Knight and Kushida tag team. Yeah. But they're the main matches for the upcoming show. So yeah, we'll keep an eye on that. There'll just be a little bit of a warm up before WrestleMania.
Be one of the many things that we cram into those hot tags on that episode when we're like the hot tags being recorded before the SmackDown that may or may not include the Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal. They still haven't said anything about that. And then before the Hall of Fame and before the NXT pay-per-view and the two nights of WrestleMania and another thing that we'll be talking about later on and before Supercard of Honor, and that's week is going to be insane. I'm not looking forward to how little rest I'm going to get. But if you are looking forward to a new women's promotion in Japan, the Stardom thing's picking up a little bit of steam. How did you say, like 5 different names have been confirmed?
Yeah, so basically Stardom announced that there's going to be 5 of their wrestlers that are finishing up their contracts with Stardom on March 31st. So they are Julia, as we all would expected. So she's going to be joining this new Rossi Gower-led promotion, but he's only going to be there for a short while before she then makes the transition over to WWE. Whenever that happens, I don't know how many months she's going to stay with this new promotion before she heads over, but I think it's only going to be like a temporary thing to help... help them get a few eyes onto the product straight away and then establish some stars, probably put somebody over and then head on off to WWE afterwards. And the other names that are joining are Utami Hayashishita, which is an interesting one because it's another one of their kind of bigger star names that has achieved quite a bit in Stardom. And is at the moment a current tag team champion in Stardom. So they're going to have to figure out a way to get the belt off her fairly sharpish or just vacate the belts. Mirai, which I'm slightly surprised about as well, because they've pushed her fairly hard in the last year or so because of she won the they're kind of their equivalent of the Intercontinental Championship, and then held that for quite a while. She's won multiple tournaments there as well, so I thought that she would probably be positioned to go after the world title in fairly soon, but she's heading over as well. But you do always have to take into account with these ones is that Rossi Agao was the guy that was booking them prior to this as well, so clearly they probably have more loyalty towards him than they do the promotion, so that's probably why part of the reason why she and others are going over. The other two are Mai Sakurai, who's kind of been who's teamed with Julia quite a lot, so I guess she's just going to try and rekindle that over there as well. And she's someone who's always been a bit on the outskirts of the Stardom like main event or mid-card scene, so she's not really going to I don't think she was ever going to make a huge splash in Stardom, so it's not the biggest thing of her going over. And Yuzuki, who was an up-and-coming name in Stardom, I think she was getting pushed quite a bit as a young up-and-comer, as somebody that could be going towards like mid-card or some other championships early on before being pushed towards the main event scene in the next like year or two. But she's obviously not going to do that now because she's going to be in the same probably position in this next promotion. And obviously we don't know a lot of details about this promotion yet. We don't have a name for that promotion. Obviously you can't make a promotion with just five wrestlers on it. so we don't know where the rest of the talent is coming from, whether it's going to be some freelancers from other promotions coming in as well. So, or if there's any other people that are being signed up, but we at least know that that at least these five wrestlers are heading over. We know certain ones that are staying with, have announced they're staying with Stardom, like Azumi and Mina Shirakawa, and there's going to be a big American Dream show that's happening on April 4th for Stardom, which is going to feature people like, I think Mariah May is going to be on it, Zaya Brookside, so some people from AEW Impact are going to be on that show as well. So, as I say, there is the clear signs now of a working relationship between AEW and Stardom that there couldn't be before because of the seeming issues that Tony Khan and Rossi Agawa had between each other. So that's basically the update. It's just that we know that certain people are leaving Stardom now and they'll have to adjust accordingly.
Well, if we're talking about Japanese women wrestlers and all, let's talk about this story with Goldberg. Now, he was on an interview with Tim Green on the Nothing Left Unsaid show, and I didn't check out the episode. It's, you know, I got plenty of other things to do than to listen to other podcasts. You know, you should be listening to Smack Talk instead. But the news story that came out of this, to quote the transcriptions of this, whatever, Goldberg's complaining essentially about WWE, and he said, "A girl beat my winning streak, beat my undefeated streak. Yeah, I can't even remember. Asuka is her name. Some Japanese girl, and they touted her as being the one to have the longest winning streak. And it just so happened that that culminated when I got there. And then it just so happened that every single wrestler uses the spear in their moves. Pretty ironic that that happened when I got there, right? The fact that I didn't get along with Paul Levesque, which is Vince's son-in-law, I think had everything to do with it." What a fucking crybaby.
Well, yeah, but also just add Goldberg to the list of just old wrestlers. Fuck that guy club. Just the old wrestlers that just shout and scream about stuff that's happening in modern wrestling and think that just because something happened in their era, it can't be either repeated or done better or take elements from that moving forward. It's like, he didn't invent the spear.
No, it's just a tackle, too. It's not even like it's this like complicated-ass move that he created that was like, oh wow, he figured out like how to twist this person in this different way. Or like, if he would have created the sharpshooter, even, it'd be like, okay, well, you know, he figured out a different submission, give him his flowers, but it's a spear. People were using it before that too. How long had she been using the spear? How long have, like,
oh, Edge definitely used it after Goldberg did.
Oh, I know he wasn't doing it before Goldberg, but it was like,
but yeah, but when he wasn't
why,
there, it's like,
why is it now an issue?
Like, Rhino's been using the gore for ages, and like Batista used a spear, and like obviously Bron Breakker does it, but I know that's more recent, but like they say, like those people use spear. It's like, just because Goldberg had a great spear, one of the best spears ever, but like, you know, it's not like he owns the move.
And it's not like people don't talk about him having a great spear still. Like that, you know, Bron Breakker's got the best one, I think, going on right now. But when people talk about that, they go like, man, Bron Breakker's got one of the best spears since Goldberg. Like, you'd think that that would be kind of an honor to be like, yeah, I popularized this move and people are using it going forward. The same as how when people do super kicks, people are like, how great is Shawn Michaels' super kick?
Yeah, then you have the thing about
Asuka stuff's worse. Yeah.
It's way worse because it's like, you know, it was fake, dude. It's like, mm-hmm. You were booked to have this long unbeaten streak, but they could have just said at any point in time, yeah, you're losing tonight, right. And then you just lost. Like, it's completely fabricated, so you can do it with any wrestler, and they decided to do it with Asuka because Asuka was an absolute dominant force in NXT, and they wanted to book her as strong as possible, and she came into the main roster and did it as well. I do like that loads of people brought up the fact that Goldberg tweeted during Asuka's unbeaten run about how congratulating her for beating his streak and stuff. Presumably that was at a point in time where he was either coming into the company or preparing to come into the company, and now that there's seemingly no chance of him coming back or being booked because Triple H is in control and Triple H doesn't seem to like Goldberg that much. Just pushing the idea of, oh yeah, that fucking sucks. Why a woman beating my streak? A woman of all people.
Like, and then also tossing out some Japanese girl like
Asuka,
you know her fucking name's Asuka.
No, she doesn't. No, he doesn't know. He doesn't know that her name is Asuka.
He's been told it before. Like, well, it's not like he doesn't. He hasn't ever heard her name. So it's like he purposely didn't register what her name was because he just didn't care, you know.
But it's so that's just, you know, sour grapes. Like, it's someone like, you made your money. You were a big star for a long time. You're a big star even longer than you should have been.
You're a Hall of Famer.
Yeah, Hall of Famer. Like, what? Just be happy. Just be content with the life that you have. Don't just go back and just say, I should still have the longest winning streak in history. I should have the longest winning streak in this fake sport where people decide who wins and loses the matches. It's just very sour. And, like, I'd say, Bret Hart was right. This guy's a dick.
I was a fan of Goldberg back in the day when he was doing the whole streak thing in WCW, but that was like lightning in a bottle, and in a way that realistically, like, yeah, it was an overact, but he came in and was immediately given this push. So it wasn't like he quote unquote earned it over the years the way that some other people have been like, oh, they finally earned their spot at the top of the company or something. He was like an experiment that ended up working out. And then they gave him these quick matches. He has plenty of issues with different people over the years that have been like, yeah, he only did this for money. He never really cared about the business. All the other kind of elements that come into the criticism. And you would think that that would be enough to be like, I have this streak that I'm always going to be tied into. I've won the world championship like 4 times or something, maybe even more than that. One of them completely disrupting the whole plans of multiple people for WrestleMania that year. I've been spotlighted countless times as like, you know, let's do this big match just because I'm me. I have still, even after being defeated, one of the best win-loss records out of any performer in like pro wrestling history. Is he's only lost to like something like 9 people or whatever. And they're pretty much like, yeah, Undertaker, Brock Lesnar, you know, Triple H types that they're, you know, top of the top. It's not like he's been like, yo, he started jobbing out to fucking Hornswoggle just for the sake of it. So they kept him strong in WWE. They gave him this big return. They gave him a championship. They gave him the main event of WrestleMania, all these other kind of things that are great. And it's like, yeah, but some Japanese girl beat my streak and now they're all using my moves and Triple H doesn't like me. That's not going to get you your big retirement match that you want, pal.
Nah, I think that's, yeah, I think the shit was probably sailed on that as soon as Vince was out of power. But I think that, that's like just another old wrestler going on podcast and shouting at the clouds.
It's a shame, because whenever they do this kind of stuff, it goes from being like, you know, me holding somebody like a Goldberg up in, not like, you know, super high regards once, and like, it's like one of my absolute favorites of all time or something, but it tarnishes their legacy, because then I'm like, oh, what a problematic thing to do on a podcast, instead of just being humble enough to say like, yeah, you know, I had my streak or whatever. The only person that's touched that has been Asuka. She's great too, or something. Then you have a completely different setup and you're like, okay, Goldberg wants his match, but he's justifiably upset that he doesn't get it, instead of just bitching and complaining. So, if Goldberg ever hears this podcast, dude, nut up. That's all I have to say. Ronda Rousey, though, has also been bad-mouthing WWE, Vince McMahon, but I am going to go on an opposite thing from the Goldberg here, and I'm going to actually flip that around as being supportive of what she's been saying. Ronda Rousey has not had a great track record from my perspective in WWE when it comes to like my level of criticism. I don't think that she's had fantastic matches. I think that her promos were awful for the most part. I didn't like how much of the focal point she took in certain ways. Some of that stuff, not her fault. Some of that's just WWE booking, you know? And she seemed kind of like a whiner in some ways, and seemed problematic in a couple ways that I'm not going to disregard now as being like, that never was a thing. But I do like the balls that she's got when it comes to the things that she's been saying recently. Have you been checking out her criticisms of WWE in the past week?
I've seen snippets of it. I think that it's one of those things where I agree with what she said, and it's like, it's good to see her come out and say the things that she's put out there. I also think the timing of it is fairly convenient. Like, she wasn't saying this before Vince was knocked off, even though she was out of the company for a while.
Like, now that it's okay to do that, then she can...
Well, I'll say that's okay. It's always okay to say Vince.
Yeah, but I mean, like, now shit, that it's there's like, less backlash of, like...
Yeah. I'd say, I'm not saying that people shouldn't come forward when they're comfortable to do it. Like, that was the thing that she needed to, like, say, okay, now I'll just come out and say all this stuff. Because it's clear she doesn't want to go back to WWE ever.
Yeah.
I'd say it's one of those things that, even though she said all this stuff, she might still go back to WWE, because you never say never in these circumstances. And she doesn't seem to have any ill will towards Triple H or Stephanie or other people in the or some other people in the company.
Yeah, it seems like she is mostly Vince and Vince's yes men.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, I like the line of her saying that it's like the deal with Saudi Arabia and that, like it's probably a place that Vince wants to, a world that Vince wants to live in, where women are subjugated.
Yeah, her line was, pay-per-views are held in major cities like New York, Los Angeles, and Philadelphia, as well as now twice a year in Saudi Arabia, a nation that restricts the rights of women in a way that I'm certain Vince McMahon wishes he could.
Yeah. Again, it's one of those things that, yeah, she's absolutely right in saying that, but then it's also a case of, well, you did go there and you did take the money to do matches there, so, like, you kind of have to do, but then again, like people like Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens have said in the past, I'm not going there, and then they do go there. So, like, I think I'm past the point now of just trying to hold like wrestlers to a super high moral standpoint, because like at the end of the day, you're just going to be picking at holes when you should just be enjoying them as characters instead. But I think what she's come out with is fairly accurate and forthright. And hopefully people do take notice of that as well. I'm interested. I'd like her to expand more on like the shit show backstage that she talks about with WWE.
Mm-hmm.
Like, is that just because of the Vince and Yes Men stuff, or from the time that she was there, or does she know anything more? Is there a wider backstage issue that we're not privy to?
Yeah, I want to know the specifics about some of these things, because a lot of it's very generalized, and some of it kind of turns off a little bit to me like a ghost writer just being like, this is the history of what it is, and let's fill in the blanks, kind of. Like, the fact that they needed to put out there the idea of, I mean, I guess it's for context more than anything else, but it just comes off a little bit like a bland and generic quote from the other thing. NXT was founded by and under the control of Triple H, real name Paul Levesque. In addition to being my in-ring WrestleMania nemesis, he is arguably one of the best professional wrestlers in history and one of the better people on the business side. He is married to Stephanie McMahon, who is the daughter of WWE's Emperor Palpatine, Vince McMahon. Vince took over the company from his father in the early 1980s and spent the better part of 40 years playing a real-world pro wrestling version of Monopoly, buying up and absorbing smaller promotions until he basically owned them all. Like, that's, you know, context for people that are reading this and, you know, not being a super knowledgeable pro wrestling fan, which makes sense for a memoir. But
I mean, I kind of think it's, with her case, it makes sense because, like, people might just have followed her from her UFC stuff. But I do kind of find it funny when other wrestlers write that sort of stuff in their memoirs. Think, who's buying your memoir if they're not a wrestling fan?
Yeah, like, if you're reading, like, Becky Lynch's memoir and it's like, in the wrestling business, we refer to a heel as a bad guy. Which, by the way, we got some heel action on Monday Night Raw this week with Cody just flat out calling The Rock a heel and all. But yeah, that kind of parts of it kind of makes me feel like maybe a little bit of this is just sort of grandstanding, and maybe not grandstanding is not the right word for it, but like, you know, like, hey, this is a big story. We got to mention it on here, and we don't really have specifics to talk about, but wow, I don't like that Vince guy, and what an evil bastard. But if there are elements that she knows or she's witnessed or been a part of or seen or whatever that are very specific, like she doesn't seem to like Bruce Pritchard at all. I would assume probably Kevin Dunn is one of the other people that she has on her shit list for being like a Vince crony. Maybe not. I don't know. But I want to know more about any of these things. I want to know about this, this kind of like casting couch type thing where she says about, the women, female talent exchanging sexual favors in return for airtime. Who's doing that? How do you know? You haven't been a part of the company for super long. Is that something that had been recently happening? And can we find out more information about that? And kind of, put the target on the people that have been awful and doing that to these women's division stars and maybe elsewhere. I don't know. I think that in anything that's like this, whether it's, you know, pro wrestling or it's that Nickelodeon documentary that's been out recently, I haven't watched it, but I've been hearing some stuff about that. Name the names, man. You know, don't protect shitty people. Now, of course, it's like it's not on you to name somebody else for, you know, this person did this and that affected them and I'm going to tell their story. But I wish that there could be more of like a transparency, I guess you could say. But I back her saying something. Any little bit like that can get the ball rolling. So that's good.
Not much more ready to add to that. Really, we'll see if more comes out with the publishing of her book.
Yeah, which I don't plan on reading, and that's not because of like an anti Ronda Rousey thing, but I don't plan on reading Becky's either. I don't like reading. That sounds so ridiculous, but it's true. I don't fucking like reading books, so I don't have any interest in checking out that. But I'll check out the stories of, like, little snippets of what has happened in these, if anybody else posts them and stuff. Getting to some TV talk. I just mentioned recently, wow, it's the same episode. I just mentioned a minute ago about that Cody promo on Monday Night Raw, where he had talked about the whole The Rock being a heel. Now I think you're just an asshole and all. I like that promo quite a bit. What do you think about that? Do you see it?
As again, so little bits and pieces of it. It was a bit insider, which I know some people aren't as big a fan of. I mean, I don't mind it because I am in that bubble, so I can find those things entertaining. I like the fact that he was talking about he didn't sink to the level of The Rock, just making jokes about Rock's mother, because he's like brought up saying, "Hey, I can talk about your mother, but she's a great lady, so why would I make jokes about that?" And it, And yeah, I think a lot of people brought it up. It's very, very similar to the promo he cut on Chris Jericho in the build-up to their world title, AEW world title match at the first Full Gear.
Yeah, the Carney something or other thing that he...
Carney Succubus.
Carney Succubus, yeah. He had to use that line. Which, you know, so, I mean, if the shoe fits. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Oh, yeah, I see why he's getting that point across. But it's just, I think it was a very good promo in the list of Cody Rhodes promos. And, we'll see what happens on SmackDown when they do this face-to-face segment with him and Roman to try and reintroduce Roman as, hey, this is the actual guy that's main event in the show, and this is the world champion, been the world champion for the last 3 years. So let's talk a little bit about him instead of just The Rock and Cody.
Which I'm wondering if it's just going to devolve into The Rock being there anyway, because obviously you know that it's not going to end up just being the two of them. It's going to have at least Solo and Jimmy and, you know, something's going to break down and all. But some of the other things that happened on Raw, we got some people moving on in that qualifier setup for the tag team ladder match. So now we know that DIY beat the Creed Brothers. We know that the New Day had moved on and they qualified over Alpha Academy. Awesome Truth beat into Cher. Some other random matches that just happened for the sake of it. I mean, there's nothing really that we need to break down when it comes to like... Yeah, Becky beating Nia. It's just a match to keep her busy in the meantime. They're still pushing this Andrade with the Judgment Day thing. And now that Ricochet's somewhere in the mix there, I don't know if it's seeming more likely that it's like Andrade and Ricochet against Dominic and JD, but that doesn't sound like a WrestleMania match to me. It sounds even better to me if it's just Andrade against Dominic, but one way or another, we're going to find that out over the next couple weeks. And, they were doing this weird thing with Chad Gable. I don't know what's going to happen with this, but Gable basically just said to Sami Zayn, you can't beat Gunther, and this means more to me than it means to you. Think there's anything that's going to come out of that?
I think they're telling a Rocky story with this one. In that the story they seem to be telling is that Sami isn't sure that he can beat Gunther, and Gunther's just playing into that by just saying, oh, this guy's a joke. Why is he facing me at WrestleMania? He has no chance of beating me. And I think that so Gable's going to be Zayn's trainer in the build-up to the match with Gunther.
Couple different Rocky stories than WrestleMania this year.
This is in Philadelphia. They're pretty much making most of the story some kind of Rocky story where it's a plucky underdog, fiery babyface going against a dominant champion that seems seemingly unbeatable. They're doing that with the Gunther and Sami Zayn. They're doing that with Vicky Lynch and Rhea Ripley. They're doing that with
Cody
and Roman. Yeah,
not quite Drew McIntyre.
No, not that one.
Yeah. He's been doing such great stuff lately. I've been loving his even like the simple stuff of when he's like, oh man, you're doing the what chant, thanks for reminding me about how I fucked up CM Punk and all. Like, he's having fun with this for sure. I'm really liking what McIntyre's been up to.
Yeah, hopefully he wins the title at WrestleMania.
I hope so. Yeah, he is one of the many title changes that I hope happen at WrestleMania. Gunther not as much. I still kind of want Gunther to retain, but I'm rooting for Drew. I'm rooting for the tag titles to switch hands in some fashion. And obviously I'm rooting for Cody because that's the most important thing at WrestleMania this year right now. And we had some interesting stuff when it came to NXT this week. Nothing like groundbreaking and all, but yeah, you know, just kind of a quick rundown of some of those things. The Roxanne Perez and Lyra Valkyria match was confirmed, which is kind of blah to me, because I said before, it's just a rematch. There's nothing more to it except Roxanne pouts more. Okay. And the Axiom and Nathan Fraser, number one contender qualifier, they beat Charlie Dempsey and Miles Bourne. That No Quarter Catch Crew Catch Clause thing came into effect with Drew Gulak retaining the Heritage Cup over Riley Osborne. A lot of stuff happening with the Obafemi Josh Briggs Dijak situation, which I still kind of think is probably going to end up being a triple threat. But they have two sets of matches coming on next week that are seemingly going to set up a number one contender. Sean Spears is probably going to be going up against Joe Gacy for this pay-per-view now that they just set up a little thing with them. Not my favorite storyline in the world, but I like it at least a little bit better than Mr. Stone being pissed at Von Wagner for carrying him out like a baby. Although I get it, you know. Quick mentions about the Ariana Grace and JJ Dolan thing. They're kind of just like stalling for time on some of these stories. Like Rich Holland's like, oh, I'm going to do what everyone wants me to do. Okay, now we have to wait until next week to figure out at least what that is. So it wasn't really like the most, you know, jam-packed episode of NXT, but they just pushed a couple things along. And anything that you had found out about that stood out to you, positive or negative?
No, I just kind of tuned out when you started mentioning NXT, so.
I didn't know if you had like read the other stuff and, you know,
if you're like, oh, that sounds, like, I can't remember it. I probably have, but I can't remember anything about it, so.
And then we had the whole setup with Dynamite this week. Two important things happening on that episode. That's for sure. Two title changes.
Yeah. Let's say they did the, it was a big, I guess in reality, it was a 3-hour Dynamite. It was 2 hours Dynamite followed immediately by an hour of Rampage. But yeah, it was a pretty noteworthy show.
Not the biggest fan of how my DVR cut it off. They cut off the end of the I Quit match, but among some other things that are, you know, obviously not, again, you know, not everything that happens on any episode of TV is ever all that important, but like Swerve Strickland beating the Butcher. Okay. You know, whatever. But Deonna Purrazzo and Thunder Rosa beat Mariah May and Toni Storm, and they had a little bit of a tension segment at the end of there with Thunder Rosa getting the pin and seemingly setting herself up for a title shot that Purrazzo was a little bit irked about. I think they're going to do that for Dynasty.
Yeah, I presume it'll be Thunder Rosa versus Toni Storm at Dynasty.
It feels like that would be the thing that makes the most sense. Maybe a triple threat at most, but I don't think you need to necessarily throw Deonna in there. Hook and Jericho had their match. They're continuing that next week as well with, I forget how he phrased it. It's something like he has a proposition for him, if I remember correctly. Is that what it was?
Mm. Yeah. I don't know if I was like, a big fan of this segment because, I don't know, it's a lot of Jericho at the moment. That's pretty annoying. And I think that there's a lot of people that are, well, I say a lot of people, there's some voices in the wrestling space that are like praising him, saying, oh, he does put people over and he put Hook over. Look how Hook took like 90% of this match and dominated it. But I just go, yeah, what happened is that Hook threw Jericho around for like 10 minutes and then Jericho brushed it off like it was nothing and then ended up losing on a fluke roll up. Like, if you're really putting a guy over and making him see Donnan, then he throws you around for 20 minutes or 10 minutes. And then he beats you just straight up by pinning you or making you submit to his hold. You don't break out of his hold, try and apply your hold and get caught by a flash pin. I think Jericho is very much in prime Hogan Nash WCW territory right now.
What do you think that the proposition is going to be?
Tag team.
Just go for the tag titles?
Yeah, which is weird because there are no tag champions right now.
Yeah. That tag title situation is, in a way that I am assuming, building up to FTR versus Young Bucks. Are you still kind of in that range, or do you think it's going to go a different way?
I presume that's probably the outcome that's going to be. Again, I'm not a fan of this tag tournament setup either, just because there's no Moxley and Claudio, and apparently there's a reason for that. The Moxley's just not been available for the time being, and so they can't put him in the tournament. But it just seems odd that like they win that big match over FTR at Revolution, and then they're not in the tournament, but FTR are.
Yeah, it's kind of defeating the purpose of the whole ranking system too, right?
Well, the rankings are dead. I think we should all accept that at that point.
That was a good 2 weeks.
yeah. It's about a month and forever, and then they just don't mention it anymore. And Swerve's probably getting another shot at the title, even though he just lost, so he should be at the back of the line. And yeah, it's dead. It's probably for the best because they don't seem to be able to book with it. So So let's just move forward. Dynamite, for the most part, has been better for the last few months anyway, so the rankings shouldn't be getting in. If the rankings are just going to get in the way of that, then better off without them, probably.
I think that they had some of the best perception of that before, and that they should just continue that, which is like keep the win-loss records as the thing you show up on the screen. And then if you ever need to call attention to that and say that this person has a great win-loss record and that justifies their championship shot, then you have it there. But don't call so much attention to it that it makes people call into question why those people didn't get title shots, because then you're booking it too much like a legitimate sports thing. And there's a big difference with pro wrestling versus something like football, where like the Super Bowl isn't, the Super Bowl isn't a storyline. This year, maybe it seems like that's not necessarily the case with the whole, the Taylor Swift thing and all, but it shouldn't logically revolve around anything other than wins and losses when it comes to, you know, the Stanley Cup or when it comes to the World Series or any of those kind of things. That's just win losses. Yeah, it doesn't matter who is going up against who. In pro wrestling, you have to tell stories. So keep the win-loss records, ignore the rankings when you don't have that working out. Talk about the rankings when it does work out and have the best of both worlds. I got to take a minute to talk about this. I'm hating Mercedes Moné's AEW stuff so far. This is the second appearance so far, and I hated this promo.
Yeah, I wasn't a huge fan of this one as a follow-up to the previous one. I mean, I liked the first one because I felt that, you know, it's an introduction to who she is and what she intends to do in AEW, but this one just felt like a continuation of last week's one. Didn't really add anything of any real substance on top of it, beyond the fact that she's seemingly going after Julia Hart and the TBS title, or she's going to be fighting Willow Nightingale at some point as well, and has clearly got unfinished business with her. But yeah, as I say, I feel like, and I know Meltzer and Alvarez commented on this, and I feel like it's pretty, I think in this instance, some of the other stuff they're saying is just weird and wrong, but this one in particular, this felt like a WWE 20-minute start of Raw promo segment.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, I don't want that in AEW.
Yeah, it's supposed to have a different presentation, and you're supposed to have, like...
But she's got a writer.
The freedom to say things the way that she wouldn't normally, but she's got the same writer she used to have, so it's all just going to be exactly the same as what it was.
I'm hoping that... And again, this is just me fantasy booking, so I can't say for certain if this is the aim they're going, but if this is me in my situation, I would hope that the plan is that it's going to be, like, 2 to 3 months of kind of this kind of rah-rah baby face, like, I'm here and it's so great and I'm going to start a revolution, I want to fight all the top people here. And then she just morphs eventually into just, you know, the real Mercedes Moné, the egomaniacal heel CEO character that's just there for the spotlight and to be, like, the top star. And then that starts off her as a heel, which would eventually culminate in Willow Nightingale beating her for some kind of title, whether it's the TBS or the World Championship. So I hope that this is the start of it, and we have to just, like, ride the wave of a couple of, you know, rah-rah babyface things to start with before then, you know, letting her run loose as a top heel in the company, which is a position where she'll probably thrive in the best. She's never really worked for me as a babyface.
To be honest, she doesn't really work that well for me as a heel a lot of the time either, because she plays the same character. It just happens to fight babyfaces. Because her character is very one note. It's just, I'm the boss, ha ha ha, I've got some swag to me. And when it works, but a promo like this, and the previous one, but this one, you know, she had an opportunity to step out of her comfort zone and do something different now that we already got through the first promo of I'm so excited to be here. For this to be exactly the same as the other one in a lot of ways, and exactly the same as what we've been hearing for years from Mercedes, it really makes me think that she can't do anything else. and somebody like a Chris Jericho can, you know, switch up to a different character once in a while. And, you know, I mean, obviously we've talked many times before about, like, sometimes people just do the same thing. We talked about this with the Rock story, catchphrases, the whole Hall of Lame that we just did, where if you have a shtick that people really love, a lot of it, you tend to do the same thing and whatever. But I do kind of feel like every single Mercedes promo from NXT onward has been just the same promo. And I don't even know why you necessarily need a writer for it. If it's got the, like, ChatGPT could do that. All you got to do is change a couple words around and it's the same promo each week. And when she turns heel, I don't think that's going to change it all that much either. I think she's going to be the same exact thing. She's just going to be putting a scowl on her face and saying it to a baby face. So I'm really looking forward to that transition being like the big saving point. More so, maybe she'll be at least a little bit more comfortable and it won't be as awkward, but I'm not digging this so far. And yeah, the writing's not on the wall in a way where it's like, you wasted all your money and it's not going to be good and all that. But I am kind of already thinking, like, not as excited about her. And I got a feeling within like a couple weeks, I'm going to be thinking of her as not saving this division and more so just being the sort of act that we've seen in other companies, whether it's WWE or TNA or whatever, where somebody comes in, they got a lot of potential, and then it's just, nah, you're doing the same. Okay. You switched over to, you're Dolph Ziggler in TNA now. You know, like that kind of thing.
I think it's the jury's still, the jury's still out. It's still way too early to judge one way or the other.
I want to be surprised. I just don't think I'm going to be. I wasn't surprised about the Okada title change, but that's okay, because you know, it's not like that's a bad thing. Kazuchika Okada beating Eddie Kingston for the Continental Championship, which means that Continental crown is definitely split up, because he does not carry the ROH world title now, and he doesn't hold the strong openweight championship. Mm-hmm. We already talked about that last week or so. Pac is coming out to basically put his foot on there as like, I'm going to be the next challenger, and I fully expect Okada to retain over Pac down the line, probably at Dynasty, I would assume.
Yeah,
Okada winning a championship is a good idea though, because he's brought in as a huge deal, so you want to make him seem like a big deal beyond just the reports about what money he's earning, you know. And a great way to do that is to give them a championship and have him have what I'm assuming is probably going to be a pretty long reign.
Yeah, I imagine so. I don't think they've got anyone immediately in mind yet, or like someone immediately ready placed to take the title off of him just yet. I assume what the hope is, depending on healthiness or whatever, that Omega will be the guy that'll take the title off of him at some point.
I can see that.
They'll definitely do Omega or a couple, considering if Kenny becomes available again, it will be Okada versus Omega at some point again. They want to do that match. Yeah, I thought this was a good match. I don't think it was like it hit like a super great match, this one. I think Okada's probably going to have to get used to trying to jam-pack his style of wrestling into more 15-20-minute chunks, as opposed to when he had a big match in New Japan, it would typically go, you know, 20 to 30 to maybe even 40 minutes long, and you can't do that on weekly television. So I think it's going to be a bit of like an adjustment period, but I think he'll get to it. I think the style that he's working, which is very much like old school heel, mug into the camera, a lot of good facial work, running around ringside for people to chase him, hitting cheap shots, I think that'll just get over really, really well. So yeah, I think it's like a positive start, and yeah, making him a champion straight away is a great way of demonstrating like this guy is a big, big deal, and you should be definitely interested in what he is going forward.
And it's not like he's in a position where when you go into like WWE, if you were to go straight onto the main roster and then be like Intercontinental champion, people will be like, what the hell? Like, why are you already getting a title? Like, Okada's a well-established name, so give him the mid-card, one of the mid-card championships, and then work his way up to winning that world title down the line. It's going to happen, I would assume. I'd probably put out the prediction that maybe Ospreay wins that belt this year and Okada's the guy to beat Ospreay.
That's definitely a very real possibility. I mean, they have a long history with it as well. And Okada's I think Okada's the right person to try and make the Cornell Championship like the number two title in the company. So we'll see if that is the thing, especially if it ends up with him feuding with Omega over it, then that's definitely, you can't just have that be like a typical mid-card feud. But yeah, it's a good move. And I'd say maybe a bit like So-So and Mercedes' first start, but Okada's definitely been a big thumbs up since coming into the company. And same probably can be said about Will Ospreay as well, in that had that great match with Takeshita, and then he's just cutting absolutely fantastic promos week in, week out at the moment, and then he's going to face Shibata next week on Dynamite. So assume that'll be another great match for him.
Bruv. Lots of bruv signs this week. Yeah. He really is. What would you consider is the number two championship right now?
I'd say right now, it'd probably be the...
It was very definitively the TNT title for a while.
Yeah, well, it had to be because that was the only one for a while.
But then when they created the All-Atlantic Championship, even then, it was like, okay, but the TNT title is still above that. And then for a little while there, the International Championship was kind of taking over that secondary spot.
Yeah, the International was definitely for a while the second best one, especially when like the TNT title was just going through like a weird period. I think now, considering the work that Christian Cage did with the title, that the TNT title is now the number two. But now that Okada is the champion, that almost immediately elevates this one to being higher up, especially if he continues to have like a pretty long reign with some good defenses with against guys like Pac that can really have really great matches with it. This will become like the workman's title for them, I think eventually we'll see the Continental Championship as the number two, especially because Tony Khan has said in recent interviews that the idea for the Continental Classic returning will be the case that the champion will enter the Continental Classic and then the title will be defended in that tournament every year still.
Still not sure if that is an idea that I'm a big fan of, but
I think it's a cool idea to have, like, you still have, like, you're still a champion, you're still defending it throughout the year, but then you're part of this big tournament as well. If you had like other incentives to it about the fact that like you win like a trophy or a big amount of money as part of it as well as like having to defend and retain your championship, I think it's interesting. It's something different.
They need to give the current champion something to win, other than just bragging rights of I retained my title.
I think that's enough. I mean, yeah, the idea is you win, you retain your championship. Surely, like, the idea is this is a tournament that we're going to do every single year. If you're the champion, you've got to be in it. If they say, well, I don't want to be in it, so okay, well, you lose the title and we'll vacate it, and then we'll put it up for whoever wins the tournament. So that's just the way it's going to be going forward. The Continental Classic is going to be an annual tradition, and the title's going to be involved in it. I think it's a I think it's so different, and it'll help make this title stand out as something unique from the other ones. I don't really like the fact that the rule associated with it is the fact that, like, the way people describe it is the rule with the Cornell Classic is that there's no outside interference involved. My argument to that being that, well, in every match there should be no outside interference involved. That's just a DQ. But if they reworded it to what I presumed the Cornell Classic was about, is that you can't have anyone at ringside. It has to be 1v1, and there can
no
be
managers,
like,
no valets, nothing.
Yeah,
yeah.
And I know the rule they kind of do is like if anyone interferes, they are immediately fired from the company. Because that was the rule they had from the Continental Classic tournament. So I presume that still follows through. But it's just a case of, well, realistically, why don't you just fire everyone that gets involved in any match?
Yeah. That's why I don't like some of those kind of rules. Like, the same as I never really liked the idea of the X Division thing where you win the title and then you can option C or something. Yeah. Like, I don't like that idea because it's like, well, why wouldn't you always just do that? And then that's why I kind of want at least the Continental Classic to be like, if you are the champion and you retain, you get rewarded with some kind of, like, I don't know, a title shot, or you get like a It could be as simple as just, you know, the old school, you get a big bonus, and we get told that the bonus is pretty substantial or something, but...
Yeah, if they did that, then yeah, that'd be fine. I mean, I'm fine with it either way, but we'll see. I mean, we'll see whether Okada is still holding the title by the time the next Continental Classic comes around. Because we know that he's pretty adept at a round-robin tournament, so...
It does strike me, though, based off of Adam Copeland beating Christian Cage for the TNT Championship and the way that things have been happening over the past couple title changes for that and the International and all, kind of makes me seem like they're not gonna be beholden to this. Like, they could switch any of those belts at any times, but I think that they are almost approaching not necessarily point of no return, but a cementing of the TNT title is the storyline title. The Continental Championship is going to be for the opposite of it, where it's like mostly just wrestling matches. And then the International Championship is going to be the third tier of that, where that could be any of those, but it's definitely not going to be on the same rung. Kind of like, it's like, yeah, the world titles, number one, TNT and Continental are 2A and 2B, and then International is 3.
I think that's definitely the position at the moment, but I think that there's going to be some fluidity with all that stuff. It just depends probably who's holding. It's all what I kind of like about AEW in that regard, is that it's all, they take the approach of the wrestler holding the title makes the title,
mm-hmm,
rather than the title making the wrestler as much.
Yeah, and for the record, I mean, we've seen that with like the Intercontinental and the United States Championship too, because we've had people like Gunther who just go out there, they wrestle, they beat people, and that's it.
Yeah.
And then we have United States Championship stuff where it's like all Austin Theory dodging people and doing storyline stuff and all.
Well, I'd say like, but there's always been sort of like a case where it's just a case of, for in WWE in the past in particular, where he's just like, oh, we've given them the Unclear title, that means that they're worth something, rather than, oh, okay, we're giving the Unclear title and then let's see what they do with it. Obviously, that's changed now with Gunther with the Unclear Championship, but for a while it just felt like, okay, just give you the Intercontinental Championship because we want to make you a big deal, but not actually do anything with you while you're holding the Intercontinental title to make you feel like a big deal. Just the fact that you're holding the title should make you a big deal.
Yeah, like what happened with Shinsuke like 3 times.
Yeah. But as you mentioned about Copeland winning the title in the I Quit match to end Dynamite, which then also started Rampage in a way as well. Yeah, this was a lot of fun. This is a lot of good old Canadian fun. In terms of just like hitting them with hockey sticks and putting on like a Boston Bruins shirt, then the Toronto Maple Leafs, and Christian throwing Copeland through a hockey net at one point. Just like, and then you had like their classic ladder stuff with like dropping him across the ladder, and yeah, like there was a crossbody for a table at one point. Copeland was bleeding. Had like interference towards the end with the patriarchy, and then Daniel Garcia and Daddy Magic coming out to even the odds, and yeah, and the finish was quite interesting, funny. I've heard some of the criticisms of it, and to be fair, I can understand where the criticism was coming from. Don't get me wrong, I find it absolutely hilarious that they tied Christian up in the ropes and then Copeland just repeatedly kicked him in the balls like 15 times. That was hilarious. But I think what they should have done, what other people said, is that he got Spike out, and then he hits Christian below the belt with Spike, which again is absolutely hilarious. But then Christian doesn't quit, and then Copeland goes to attempt murder on him, just like put the spike through his head, and then he has to quit. What other people said, and I kind of agree with now in hindsight, is probably he should have gone for the nut shot. Christian should have quit before he hits the nut shot, and then Copeland wins the title, but he says, no, go fuck yourself, and then he hits him with the nut shot anyway.
Yeah.
Just add that little cathartic end to it, because the nut shot got such a great reaction. And the crowd would have booed if Christian had quit, and everyone would have been so disappointed that he's quit, so they don't get to see the nut shot, and then Edge gives them the nut shot, and then you're just like, oh, that's super cool. But yeah, it's a great moment. I'd say, as someone who was a bit lukewarm about this potentially happening, I think Copeland has had a fantastic run in AEW so far, and it's great to see him win the title.
2-time champion now, officially.
Yeah. And the real one now.
Yeah, seemingly an actual title change.
And he said in a thing that came out on Twitter afterwards that he's bringing back the Cope Open following this as well. So now it seems that the TNT Championship is going to become a Open Challenge title.
Copeland Challenge?
Yeah, the Copeland Challenge is going to be... So basically it's Adam Copeland doing the John Cena Open Challenge with the title, which I think could be cool.
It's usually a good way to incorporate quick matches without having to do feuds where, you know, like Copeland can have matches against any number of people that he wanted to do something in the ring with without having to be like, okay, how do we do a 2-month feud over this? And what story do we tell between him and Dante Martin or something, you know?
But I'm happy with this all because I think that this will end up with two things. One, I think it's going to end with Daniel Garcia beating Copeland for the TNT title.
I'd be down for that. Point.
Which I'd be happy about. I think that would be another respectful way. And then it's also, I think, setting in motion now the breakup of the patriarchy, which I don't think is going to happen immediately. I think it's still going to be like months down the road. But I think that will end up with in the circumstance where Copeland and Christian get back together as a tag team at some point later this year, and then they win the tag titles one final time.
That's what I'm hoping happens at least at some point, yeah.
I think that's the plan. I think that they at least see that vision. It's just making sure that they can get there because, yeah, we never know what's going to happen. But I imagine there's going to be some circumstance where. See, I think the Luchasaurus is going to break away or kill switch now, but eventually Luchasaurus is going to break away and turn babyface. But then there has to be a situation where Nick Wayne turns on Christian and that turns Christian babyface. Nick Wayne needs to be the big star heel coming out of this, I think.
I'm going to put out a prediction for, I'm assuming that won't happen until at least 2025, but the tag title situation of tossing out like Copeland and Christian getting back together and all, I'll go so far as to say they fight FTR because they have a connection with them.
Oh yeah, that'll definitely happen at some point. I don't know whether that'll be the team they beat for the titles, whether that'll be FTR winning the titles off of them. Definitely will have a match.
I could see Cage and Copeland beating the Young Bucks for the tag titles, and then FTR beating them for the tag titles. I think
that could definitely be the case.
Because I expect the Young Bucks to win the tag titles this time around.
If Copeland and Christian were to come back as a tag team, would you like them to go back to the 5-second stuff?
See, I wasn't watching so much around that time frame, but I do think that if I would have been watching, I probably would have liked that a lot. So I think that they could play into that and they should, you know, kind of do the hits. Yeah.
I think they should do like, I don't want them to be like a full blown nostalgia act.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good to incorporate some elements of that into it, be like the grizzled veterans that you kind of are now still. But that was a cool moment. And then it bled over into Rampage. I say there wasn't like as much like stuff from Rampage we talked about, like Takeshita beat Rocky Romero. Said that like Strickland beating the Butcher, so he's going to have a match with Takeshita on Dynamite, and that's seemingly a de facto number one contenders match for Samoa Joe at Dynasty. So presumably Strickland will win that, but it should be a fun match. Other stuff happened, but the big thing from Rampage, other than seeing the end of the I Quit match, was the Street Fight women's tag match at the end between Sky Blue and Julia Hart defeating Willow and Chris Statlander. Again, it's just like this is like an AEW tradition. Like there's like certain standards of AEW, and one standard for AEW is that if you have a women's Street Fight tag match, it's going to be a great match. Regardless of it, who's involved, it's just always a great match, and this was no exception. They were awesome. Sky Blue, this was definitely Sky Blue's best match in AEW by a long way. She was awesome in this match. Like she was using thumbtacks, and she hit a code blue on Willow Nightingale on the announce table. She kicked thumbtacks in Chris Statlander's face, and then she took a Death Valley driver from Willow through two tables on the outside. And then Julia Hart tapped out Chris Statlander. So that's interesting because it basically means that you would assume that considering a tag match and she's the champion, that her team would lose and then the winner would get the title shot with her, but they decided the champion wins. So I presume they're moving into the path of, okay, so it's going to be Mercedes versus Julia for the TBS title. And they're kind of pushing Statlander, and with Statlander losing, she gets frustrated. She turns heel on Willow. They're feuding for a while. So Mercedes can then focus on the TBS title, going off Julia to win that. And then we kind of go from there, really. Eventually it culminates in Willow versus Mercedes in some fashion.
I have not checked out Rampage, but I've heard some good stuff about that street fight, so I might have to go back and check that out at least.
It's only like 10 minutes long as well, so it's not like it's like a 20-minute, like, have to devote a lot of time. You can just catch up with it pretty quickly.
And then our final hot tag here for this week is going to be something I did not anticipate them announcing, but they announced this earlier today, so thankfully before the hot tags. The Slammy Awards are returning, and they are very much harping on, for anybody who's like not familiar with the Slammy Awards, they are giving it a subtitle this year. So they are referring to it as the 2024 Slammies, the Fan's Choice Awards, and it is going to stream live during the WWE World, which, remember, is a new renaming of the Access thing. I still think that they are missing out on calling that Slamboree, but that's another story. It's going to be Sunday, the 7th of April, which means the one time that I thought I was going to have a break during that weekend, I'm not, because they're going to have the NXT stuff before night one, and then they're going to have this before night two of WrestleMania. I don't know how this presentation is going to go, but it's going to be hosted by Kathy Kelly and Big E. So that should be, you know, Kathy Kelly's good, Big E's fun. It's going to be a live thing, so I guess I'll be tuning in live and doing coverage for that. But they have the votes out there as the thing that you can go ahead and vote on WWE.com for these different categories. Going to break them down here, talk about that, nominees, predictions, and all that. Female Superstar of the Year. The nominees are Rhea Ripley, Bianca Belair, Io Sky, Becky Lynch, and Bayley. I am assuming the winner for this is probably going to be Rhea Ripley. But Becky's super popular, Bianca's super popular. It's just Bayley and Io aren't going to win.
I'd say that Rhea's probably going to win that one.
Rhea is way more popular than, you know, a lot of other superstars are at the moment. So if they are going to leave this entirely up to the fans' vote, then, you know, that kind of dictates some of that stuff. But then again, you know, Bianca and Becky, they could sort of steal the victory. It wouldn't be super shocking to me. Male Superstar of the Year is down to Cody Rhodes, Roman Reigns, Seth Rollins, Gunther, and Logan Paul. Certainly not Logan Paul. He's not going to end up getting that vote. I think it'll probably be Cody, but it wouldn't shock me if it was still Roman.
Yeah, I would probably lean towards Cody on that one. I don't think that... I think that his popularity probably supersedes Roman at this point. I think if it was my choice, I would go Gunther, but it's probably going to be Cody.
Yeah, and for anybody who's curious about like who we think should win these, go back to the end of the year awards that we do for SmartCat Moment. So, you know, you can get the best in-ring talent, worst in-ring talent, best mic on skills, you know, all that other kind of stuff like that. Entrance, we already, you know, that's one of our categories too. Those are Cody Rhodes, Roman Reigns, Bianca Belair, Seth Rollins, Rhea Ripley, Becky Lynch, The Rock, and specifically Dominic Mysterio's from WrestleMania 39. I don't know why they had that one as like a, we can only talk about that there, but it's also interesting that that's more than five for that category. So they wanted to put these people in there, And
because WWE fans care about entrances and finishes and nothing else that happens in a match. For the most part, I'd say. Out of these choices, I mean, they might go with Seth because of the whole crowd interaction thing.
He's got a good chance of winning it.
But then Cody has the big shout.
It's between those two. And I think
that they'll just vote for The Rock because it's The Rock.
And it could be, but I think that he is a certainty to get a lot of votes just for being The Rock in general, and he might be the spoiler for the return of the year. It's either The Rock or CM Punk. It's not going to be Nia Jax. It's not going to be Naomi. And it's not going to be Randy Orton, realistically, because his return at Survivor Series was overtaken by CM Punk. So is it just a matter of, do you go with The Rock because he's The Rock, or is that CM Punk's award to win because CM Punk isn't really listed a whole lot of other places? I think it might be, but I think we also might have him. I mean, it doesn't seem like you can win one or the other, but he is in at least one other category. So it's either The Rock coming back or it's CM Punk between those, I think, for turn of the year.
I think people will vote for CM Punk because it was more shocking and was more of a interesting moment of him coming back. So I think people will at least visualize that a bit more and say, like, oh yeah, that was crazy, him going back to WWE after, of all people, coming back to WWE. Whereas Rock, it's like, okay, he was part of the board of directors, so it's pretty much an inevitability he was coming back at some point.
Faction of the year, I don't know why Imperium's on the list, and Alpha Academy's on the list as well. Damage Control, the Bloodline, and the Judgment Day. It's pretty much between the Bloodline and the Judgment Day, I would assume. And
it should be the Judgment Day.
It should be, but I think people probably will go with the Bloodline just because it's still regarded as the top faction. But then again, we've had instances in the past where, like, the NXT year-end awards, where they've gone with people where it's like, oh, look at that, they actually went with somebody who isn't just treated like the bigger star. So,
see, I think the Judgment Day are the bigger faction than the Bloodline. It's just the Bloodline has Roman Reigns in it.
Yeah,
it's the same way that Imperium's on this list because they have Gunther. Like, essentially, the Bloodline is Roman and two flunkies.
Yeah, whereas, but you know how WWE, it's like, wow, what a dominant faction this year. And it's like, did they really do anything? You know?
Well, they'll say that about all of them. They'll even say that about Alpha Academy.
Yeah. Rivalry of the year options are Seth Rollins against Drew McIntyre, Dominic Mysterio against Rey Mysterio, which kind of concluded at last year's WrestleMania, so I don't know why that's still continuing. Bianca Belair versus Damage Control, Roman Reigns versus Cody Rhodes, and R-Truth against The Judgment Day. I think it'd be funny if R-Truth and The Judgment Day won, but I'm expecting it to be Roman and Cody.
I mean, it should be Cody versus The Rock, really.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, they'll probably go Cody and Roman. This might be one of the ones where the fans decide to just troll vote and it's R-Truth versus Judgment Day.
Could be.
So I don't think any of the other ones are like so strong that, oh, it's definitely going to be one of those ones to win. So they might just, I think there's a good chance that some fans will troll vote this one.
I'm surprised it's not Cody Rhodes and Jey Uso against the Bloodline or something like that to throw Jey in there.
Or even Jey versus Jimmy or something.
Yeah. NXT Superstar of the Year, which it's funny that that's a thing when you have the end of the year awards for NXT specifically.
This is bullshit, right? This one, right?
The options are Carmelo Hayes, Lyra Valkyria, Tiffany Stratton, Bron Breakker, and Ilya Dragunov.
So it should be Trick Williams, right?
It really should be, because Trick Williams has been the breakout guy of the year that a lot of this has been focused on. Yeah.
So it's the fact that he hasn't won the title that's probably holding him back from this one.
I'd take Bron Breakker off the list, though, and put him in there.
Oh, yeah. I would definitely have Trick Williams in it, and he would then probably win it. But now that we've got these options, my choice is probably Tiffany Stratton to win this one.
I know it's not going to be Lyra. Realistically, it's not going to be her. I could see Dragunov getting this. I could see Hayes getting it. Stratton isn't elsewhere on this list, so maybe that's going to be like all eyes on Tiffany Stratton votes there. I don't think Bron Breakker is going to end up winning this, but I think my vote would probably go out of this group. I'd probably go with Hayes. More than Stratton. I could see Stratton winning.
I think Stratton has the advantage of being on SmackDown now and being exposed to a bigger audience. And also the audience has already like fully embraced her anyway as a big star. So I think that she's likely to win this one. If it was my choice, I'd go with Dragunov, but yeah.
Our five match of the year options are the San Juan Street Fight, Bad Bunny against Damian Priest from Backlash of last year, Gunther versus Chad Gable on the September 4th episode of Raw, Roman Reigns versus Sami Zayn at Elimination Chamber, Asuka versus Bianca versus Charlotte at SummerSlam. Kind of surprised about that one. And Charlotte against Rhea from WrestleMania.
So,
some good picks.
Yeah, but
they're missing some.
Well, they're missing the two ones that we voted for as our match of the year from WWE last year, which is the Gunther McIntyre Sheamus triple threat match from WrestleMania, and then the Usos versus Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens match from WrestleMania.
Pretty surprising, right? I would have picked either of those over the triple threat from SummerSlam for the women's division.
That's because they wanted to put two women's matches on this one.
Yeah, pretty much.
So, yeah, out of these choices, I guess probably Flair versus Ripley was the best match out of these ones.
I think, prediction-wise, San Juan Street Fight's going to win.
It's always got Bad Bunny in it, so maybe just if his fans come and flood it, then there's a good chance of that.
Depends on how many Bad Bunny fans are out there versus how many Rhea Ripley fans.
Again, it's quite weird about them doing the Roman Reigns versus Sami Zayn match, considering that's like before that's like a month before WrestleMania. So that was it happened over a year ago. So the fact they're encompassing that as well.
Yeah, like when do the Slammy Awards have like the Oscars every year? It's like from this date until this date. Is this WrestleMania until WrestleMania? If so, why are you counting the things before WrestleMania? Is it the beginning of 2023 to the end of 2023? Then we don't count anything that's happened these past couple months, even though that's going to definitely influence a lot of people. That's one of the reasons why I always do the end of the year awards at the end of the year, because I'm like, nope, started at the beginning of the year, ends at the end of the year. That's what we're working with. But hey, I'm only somebody who cares about these things more than they do. I also just don't like the idea that the Slammy Awards are around this time frame when it's like, yeah, that's the Slammy Awards and NXT Stand and Deliver and two nights of WrestleMania and the Hall of Fame all at the same time. Just the busiest week of the year with all the other shit that's happening outside of WWE too. You can't put the Slammy Awards in front of SummerSlam. It's the Slammy Awards. Wouldn't that make sense? It's like the Summer Slammy Awards. There's also Oh My God Moment of the Year. Rey Mysterio punching Dominic, CM Punk returning, Io Sky cashing in her Money in the Bank contract, The Rock slapping Cody Rhodes, which means that we are counting things prior to WrestleMania last year, and something that just happened a few weeks ago. So the time frame is basically, I think, January 2023 up until now. And that includes Cody Rhodes slapping The Rock on the 8th of March. And Damage Control turning on Bayley. So yeah, it's the year and a quarter awards. Oh My God, Moment of the Year, I would think would go to CM Punk.
Yeah, I'd say that's likely, because the two slapping incidents will probably cancel each other out in the voting.
Yeah. And then, Rey Mysterio punching Dominic, we're talking a year ago. That's lost its steam at this point. Cashing Money in the Bank, we've seen it a bunch of times too. So, the social star of the year, Grayson Waller, Logan Paul, Drew McIntyre, Chelsea Green, and Liv Morgan. Is that not just a way to have Liv Morgan stands to win the award for her?
Well, we'll see how strong the Liv Morgan stands are.
Yeah. Now's your time, everybody. You keep talking,
I think Logan's going to win this.
Grayson Waller could. I think he's got a chance.
Well, no, I think that, essentially this is social star of the year, so they're essentially going to try and utilize their social platforms to get people to vote for this one. And I think that Logan Paul has the biggest reach out of any of them. So he's going to just use his platform to say, hey, vote for me for this. And they'll say, yes, we will vote for you for this.
Maybe they could cancel each other out, the Liv Morgan and Logan Paul ones.
Because they're all be voting for the fact that they do stuff on like Twitter and TikTok, really.
Yeah.
Like they've seen like some of McIntyre's recent stuff that he's doing, where he does some really funny TikToks where he's just cutting promos on Cody and CM Punk and all that other stuff. Like he's a lot of fun.
And Chelsea's got some good stuff too, so I see why she's in there. And then the breakout superstar of the year, Jey Uso, Tiffany Stratton, pretty deadly. Kind of surprised about that one. Dragon Lee and LA Knight. One of these things is not like the other.
Yeah, pretty deadly probably shouldn't be on this one, but maybe they couldn't think of any other breakout superstar to put on it.
Off the top of my head, I don't know who I would go with outside of throwing somebody from NXT in there that wouldn't win either, but like, Oba Femi's done more than Pretty Deadly, you know?
I guess they have to be on the main roster, seemingly, to do that.
Yeah, at this point, yeah. I mean, Stratton and Dragon Lee are, yeah.
So, I don't know who would necessarily be a breakout star on the main roster at the moment. About these ones.
It's Jay or LA Knight, I would assume.
Yeah, I'd say it's either Jay Uso or LA Knight on this one. It'd be interesting to see which one of those two wins it. See whether the LA Knight hype has kind of cooled off a little bit, or whether he's still considered a big deal. I mean, he's still, was it the number 2 or 3 merchandise mover in WWE right now? So maybe that's an indication that he'll win this one.
Yeah. You know, when it comes to breaking this down, of course, we are going to have a loaded weekend, so won't be able to give it as much attention as I would have normally hoped, but that's why it's, you know, the thumbnail for this episode of the Hot Tags and stuff. So we'll talk about that in some fashion on that post show, I guess. Maybe, I don't know, maybe we'll wait and talk about that in the Hot Tags after WrestleMania or something. But you have your options, you've got your nominees, so go vote on that. Obviously also go vote on the Smart Madness tournament that's happening right now on smartcommoment.com. Reminder again, check out that Funko Pop contest that we have for that Rocky Maivia Funko Pop. 3 of them, 3 winners going to be chosen for that. Check out that Dark Cast that I had mentioned before. Subscribe to the YouTube channel membership or the Patreon for that Hall of Lame, where we get into some really deep discussions over a lot of different topics there. 7 different categories and 3 to 9 different things that we've mentioned in like each one of those. There's the Discord server that I mentioned prior to this before. Check out fanboysanonymous.com. And also, of course, go to the link tree at amangotree.com. You will see links to pretty much everything that is under amangotree. Follow me at TonyMango in the process, and follow Callum as well.
Yep, you can find me on Twitter at WeekMost14. Check out the Power Rankings every weekend over on smartcommentary.com, where I'm ranking the WWE superstars based on their prior week's performances. And there you can also find the Fantasy League, also at WWEFantasyLeague.com, where we're just a couple of weeks now away from WrestleMania and crowning the winner for this season. It's still pretty tight at the top. Definitely plenty of points cut up for grabs at WrestleMania, where the points are worth double. So let's see how it goes, and he'll be the champion at the end of this season, and then we'll put plans in motion for next year's season as well. So got some ideas working in the background about that. So yeah, so head on over to WWEFantasyLeague.com to see how we're all doing.
Okie dokie, everybody. You know what that means. That is it for this episode of the Hot Tags. Thanks as always for tuning in. Thank you for all your support. And thank you in advance for checking out the next main event that we have coming your way, which at the moment is currently a breakdown of the Hall of Fame class with a Wrestling with the Past / One More Match discussion, basically going over again. We will talk about, you know, who would we like to see them if we could go back in time or do this fantasy booking type of thing where we put the US Express in one more match scenario. Who should they go up against? Was it Bray Wyatt and Bo Dallas? That'd be kind of interesting. Or is it something else? If Paul Heyman could have a match, whatever it might be like that. We're going to get into a lot of those discussions. If that ends up being preempted in some way and we end up doing something else, then you'll find out when we figure that out. It's not currently the plan, but you never know. And then we'll get into the week from hell of 1,900 shows happening all at the same time. So, this next week might be a little bit on the down low to try to prep some stuff for that week that follows, where everything's just complete chaos. I don't know. In any fashion, you will find it out there on smartcowmoment.com, along with everything else that is up on that website. Random articles, random TV coverage and stuff. And we want to thank you for all your support. And basically, that's it. So, adios for now, everybody. This has been another Smart Cow Moment, and we are being counted out.